Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and illusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners or advertisers of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and certainly the views of, for the next hour, Melody Cederstrom of Gold and Silver Discount.com, and we're going to be talking about what's happening in the markets today, because, of course, it's fascinating. You have to understand that the television, the radio, the newspapers determine how we feel. I had a good friend of mine who told me that just today, three people didn't know one another. All three of them called him and asked him what to do. They had the CDs coming due, and they wanted to know what to do with their money. Now, these are people with a fair amount of money, but these people are frightened. And I think increasingly people are frightened, and they are supposed to be frightened. Basically, we're told that General Motors is having very, very real problems. Some people even talk about the possible bankruptcy of General Motors. Certainly General Motors is cutting back, changing a whole manufacturing procedure, going to have to cut back on the pensions and the things that they are offering their employees. And, of course, they're losing money on every car they sell. You can only do that for a certain period of time before you get into real trouble. General Motors has divested itself of many of the companies that it had and tried to get back to bare bones and is losing money on a regular basis here in the United States. Now, they are making money over in China, and perhaps that will be the salvation for General Motors. And before long, the Chinese-built General Motors cars will be coming to the United States, but I fear that very, very soon, American-built General Motors cars will become a remembrance of things past. We're finding that many of our banking stocks, if you own them or follow them, the banking stocks are plunging. Some of our banks, certainly a major bank closed last Thursday or Friday. People lined up out in front, and the government moved in to take over the bank. But people say, well, eventually people are going to get their money back from FDIC, but they just don't say exactly when they're going to get their money back from FDIC. And then, of course, as we watch some of the other things that are happening over the weekend, well, of course, the government agreed to go in and refinance Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Certainly, this is a government-chartered lending corporation with about $5 trillion in loans out there. How many of them are bad loans? We don't know. Where's the Fed going to get the money to finance that if more and more of those loans go bad? And what are they going to do with all the homes if they end up foreclosing on them? These are uncertain times. Gold was up strongly this morning, then dropped back to about 974, somewhere in that range, 974, 975, from almost 985, and silver was back a little bit. What you can feel from listening to the television and from listening to the radio is that something big is going to happen. Melody, do you have that feeling as you are watching things as they're going on?
Absolutely. We are on the brink, and I do believe as we speak, and each day I wake up, it amazes me that things are still together, and I've always said things will change overnight and our whole world will be different, and it will affect each and every one of us. This is rapidly unfolding and probably a lot faster than many thought.
And I think the thing is, that could the Federal Reserve System intervene? Yes, they could intervene if they were doing the right thing instead of course, continuing to pump money into the economy. Do you realize that the Federal Reserve System between 1971 and 2005 increased the amount of money 12-fold? 12-fold. They're supposed to maintain the amount of money for stability. And then in the last 3 years, we've pumped an additional $4 trillion. $4 trillion, highly inflationary. And what are they doing? Why, they continue to inflate. Well, Melody, of course, the thing is that I think that if they wanted to do what was right, it would certainly be temporarily harmful to our economy, but they could rescue it. And yet it seems that from purely a Keynesian point of view, they're doing everything wrong. Do you have that feeling?
Absolutely. They're doing, this is totally bigger than what they can handle. So they can, they're truly putting little band-aids on a very big cut. And Bernanke made it very clear today that they will continue to increase liquidity in the system. I don't think he's going to raise interest rates, and he's going to be making loans available to any institution that will probably need it. So they're just going to keep on going. But if we go back in time, oftentimes we talk about agendas. We talk about GM and their agenda, and that they're going exactly the way they planned it. And if we go back over the past couple of years, they knew exactly what was going to happen. They knew exactly how it was going to play out because they took away the M3. They changed the bankruptcy laws to all protect themselves. And really, that's all Bernanke's doing. He is protecting Wall Street. He is helping those people cover their assets, so to speak. He's helping the wealthy people themselves and to protect them. And that's what it's all about. So this has been planned for a very long time. They knew exactly what was coming down the pike, and we are here. They knew. The only people that didn't know was the American people.
Well, of course, I think that you and I anticipated that we were going to get to the situation when we saw that they changed the bankruptcy laws, when we saw that they, of course, were doing away with the publication of M3. And for those of you who don't know, M3 is simply the Fed's estimate of the total money and credit that's available out there in the entire economy. M1 deals simply with the currency available and money markets, and then you get into M2 where you expand it and gives you even a better idea. But when you get to M3, you anticipate what the government is really doing, and they're pouring massive amounts of money and credit out there trying to hold this thing together. But it's highly inflationary. The purpose of the Fed is to preserve the value of the currency. But they're not doing that. They're preserving their friends on Wall Street. And as far as the value of the currency, of course, every time you add another trillion or $2 to the amount of money in circulation, you further undermine the value of the dollar. And what you're doing, of course, is eroding the value of the CDs, the annuities, the bank accounts, the pension funds, the insurance that people have spent their whole life to accumulate value. And this is exactly the same thing that has happened time and again throughout history. A fiat money system doesn't work because, of course, men are corruptible and we have them. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon or this evening is Melody Cederstrom. We're simply talking about what's going on financially in the world. And instead of doing what was right to preserve the currency, Ben Bernanke, who, of course, is doing everything he can to save his friends on Wall Street and simply pouring money out into the banks, which are many of them are illiquid. And so they simply take their faulty investments, and now those belong to the government, and they give them more money. They belong to the Federal Reserve System, which it could be taken back by the government. But why would the government want to take back an organization that will have trillions of dollars of assets that have absolutely no value? And this is exactly what's happening. And they're pouring money out. They're giving money to the investment banks. They're rewarding the people who've made faulty investments. And, of course, in the meantime, of course, by so doing and expanding massively the supply of money and credit, they're destroying the value of what the life savings of the American people, exactly as it happened time and time again down throughout history. And as certainly we saw at the time of the Weimar Republic, we saw this in Russia, we saw this in Argentina recently, and of course we're seeing it happen in the United States. One time the term was as sound as the dollar, and unfortunately the dollar is no longer sound. They're just printing more and more and more and more. Can you imagine, according to Congressman Ron Paul, and you can, if you don't believe this, you can go up our internet site and click on, that's radioliberty.com, click on Congressman Paul, and I think this is where he talks about Iran. We have several of his clips there, but the one he talks about Iran, and he says, in the last 3 years, the Federal Reserve System has increased the money and it really means money and credit, $4 trillion. I mean, $1 trillion, that's almost half of the half of the national debt, and they've simply poured that money out, totally worthless money, not worth the papers printed on in many instances. Well, Melody, what are you hearing from your if people are calling you? Because I'm sure they're calling you on a regular basis now when we see gold and silver moving up as strongly as they have in this last couple of weeks.
Absolutely. They're finally getting the picture. They're beginning to become very concerned about what's going on. They're concerned about getting their funds out of the banks. And you can read newsletter after newsletter writer and the very good ones like Bob Chapman, Jim Sinclair, each and every one of them is saying, get your money out of the banks. And you must own gold. You can't forget that gold is a currency, and it is very important. And so people are becoming more, and they're beginning to switch their funds around, and hopefully it's not too late for them. I also hear a lot of different reports where this will unfold quickly, and I hear other reports that it can take 2-3 years for it to unwind. But folks, I wouldn't wait for 2-3 years. I would do it immediately and become active in your funds. And you control your money. You work for your money. And you can't listen to these people who will try to calm your fears, who will try to keep you from doing what you want to do. That's their job. They're going to try to keep your funds where they're at. They don't want to lose your business. But you do have to take control. You manage it, and you learn what's going on. You know what's going on. You can do a very fine job of managing your own money. So you must take action. And this is not like the savings and loans. You see a lot of comparisons and thinking that this is similar to the savings and loan situation we had, and this isn't. The taxpayers were able to bail out the savings and loans. Well, I don't think the taxpayers will be able to do that this time. But again, as Dr. Stan had mentioned, myself mentioned, they're just going to continue to print money. They're going to continue to increase the liquidity and make it available for all who needs it.
And of course, as you increase the amount of money and credit in circulation, you devalue the dollar. And so what this is largely responsible for the rising prices that we see, the rising price of food, the rising price of oil, is because, of course, the value of the dollar is going down. And probably 40-50% of the rise in oil has been related not to the fact that oil is going up, but the value of the dollar is going down. Probably the other 50% is speculation, which the government has allowed to take place. Did the government change the requirements? I read something or heard something about that. Are they were going to begin to intervene in the speculation commodity market? Had you heard anything about that?
Well, I heard that they were going to try to do that. I believe it was Lieberman that was involved. I'm not sure, but I think it was Lieberman that was involved in that, trying to create some sort of legislation in order to prevent the speculation of commodities. I believe there's some foreign countries who did that, and that probably really isn't a good thing to do. I know lots of times even I myself have a difficult time understanding how they even began to trade commodities in order, you know, something that is very basic and very staple of our lives to gamble on it, and that affects many people. But farmers used to buy insurance. You know, instead, then they were able to trade commodities, and it provided the same thing, I believe, as far as I understand.
Well, basically how it works is that, let's say you're a cattle farmer, and you're going to you're going to sell your cattle at a certain time in the future, and you'd like to get maybe $1 a pound for the cow. So basically what you do is you don't know what's going to happen. Maybe the price is going to drop between now and the time that the cow is ready to be sold. And so if you lock in the price of $1 a pound on a 1,000-pound cow, well, you go ahead and you actually sell that on the exchange for $1,000, and so then you know, of course, you know, if it, it pardon me, you actually you buy that, and that locks it in. And then, of course, if the price goes down, why, of course, you sell it on the exchange. And that way, of course, if the price goes down further, you're not going to get, you sell at a specific price. And so you're sure you're going to have that that dollar a pound. And so you sell, 10,000 pounds of beef, and they're going to get $10,000 back. So, it gives you an idea. It gives you an insurance. It certainly is not a bad thing to do. The wheat farmers have done that for years. They want to lock in a price in the future, and that's what they're doing when they sell in the future. The trouble is when you get speculators in there, they can be, traditionally, they can drive the prices down by selling things they don't even own. And this was my understanding, is that they were going to begin to regulate this. You're not allowed, say, to sell wheat if you don't have the wheat. And, of course, you can't. And what they've done is, this is how they've manipulated the price of gold and silver. They've sold billions of ounces of gold and silver that don't even exist. And because they have so much, and because they have so much wealth, they're able to manipulate the markets. They've done this, and the government has allowed them to do it in a similar manner. Of course, they're buying oil and driving the price of this up because they're buying so much oil, more oil than really exists on the market. So, but it's just fascinating to see this, what's going on. The difficulty is that, of course, it is not a true market. It's not a free market. It's a manipulated market. And the government has allowed this as far as the price of oil. And this is why the price of oil is up so high. It was interesting. It did drop today, and I wonder if they're anticipating maybe the government is going to intervene. They should intervene. You should not be allowed to sell something you don't have or be able to buy something that you don't intend to take delivery on. So anyway, of course, if you're out there in the listening audience, if you have a question or comment, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And of course, my producer comments, remember, there's a seller for every buyer of a contract of a barrel of oil. So somebody is agreeing to sell it, but sometimes they're selling oil that doesn't exist. And of course, if the people actually take delivery, they're in real trouble. Because he who sells but isn't his'n has to give it back or go to prison. That's one of the old adages of the commodity market. Well, certainly, the price of gold has certainly been made an amazing move here in the last couple of weeks, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And we had the breaking point of 950 and traveled to 990 very quickly, and 990 was another level in which it would have to break through. And I believe once it breaks through, I'm not quite sure what the next level is. We're probably looking around where we had an intraday high of 1,030. So they're moving very quickly between these levels, and I expect it to continue as we see the dollar continue to erode. And it was interesting today, there's an interview that was done today by David Bloom. I'm not sure if you heard of him. He's written a book, and he talks about how the automobile was originally designed to run on alcohol, in which you can run your automobile and alcohol today, and he's just not selling something to show you how to run your vehicle and alcohol. He goes into the politics and how the Rockefellers had the excess gasoline in their reserves, in which how they promoted to switch the vehicles to run from alcohol to gasoline, so they could, because they were just dumping gasoline because it was just a wasted byproduct. And it was an interesting story, and I haven't had an opportunity to listen to the complete interview, but also it goes on to say that oftentimes we hear about how England and the European countries and other countries pay such a high premium on their gasoline. They're paying $10, $11 a gallon for gasoline, and we don't. And he goes on to tell about how the gasoline is actually subsidized by our government in order to keep the prices at a lower price. So, again, if those subsidies are coming off, we could, it's another reason why our gasoline prices are rising.
Well, because one of the reasons why it's so expensive over there in Europe is because of the massive taxes. In fact, they're paying as much for taxes or even more than the price of the gasoline. So over in Europe, they're doing that, of course, to discourage people using their cars. And though they have their cars, why, it's pretty expensive to drive them. They would really like to get the people onto the mass transit. They haven't been able to convince everybody that they've got to give up their cars over there, but they sure make it miserable for the people when they, of course, they do drive their cars. How'd you like to be paying $8 to $9 a gallon for gas? We'll be right back.
We will.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let's go to Ron calling from Richland in Washington. Hi, Ron. Do you have a question or comment?
Well, I just have a comment, Dr. Stan. I was at a church camp, and I got to meet some missionaries. And I talked to a fellow who was a missionary in Brazil. And I talked to him about the devaluation of the currency because he had been through several of those in Brazil when they just scratched the last three zeros off the currency. And the new whatever it was is worth a thousand of the old whatever they were. I'm not sure what they called the Brazilian currency at the time. But he said they froze the bank accounts. They said, don't worry, you'll get your money back. Well, they got it back like 3 years later, and it was worth just a fraction of what they had.
Right.
And what the government did is they just stole the people's money. And I was at a seminar when there some fellow was another one of a fellow who works for a company that deals in gold coins and bullion and such. And I noticed a fellow who was a returned missionary from Brazil. I knew he didn't have a lot of money, but he had seen what had happened when the government stole people's money like they did. And that's exactly what they're doing. They're swindling the working stiff out of his hard-earned money.
Right.
I mean, they're just nothing but counterfeiters. And he was there, and what little he'd had to save, he was a missionary. How much do those guys get paid? And he was very concerned. He could see the same thing happening here. And I also talked to this missionary who's still in Brazil. I said, the devaluation of our currency must really be hurting you guys, because any assistance we give them in dollars is worth less and less all the time. I mean, this has ramifications in many, many different aspects.
I agree with you totally, and I think that obviously the people who have been through one of these inflationary spirals understand they can wipe out a large part of the population, and certainly can wipe out people's savings. People in South America understand that, and at least the middle class tries to protect themselves by being intangibles and buying property and holding that property, because of course with the inflation the value of the property goes up, or at least the property maintains the value of the property. People here in the United States, Ron, really don't understand inflation. This is the big problem we have, is that they're not getting the truth from the media. We do not have 2% core inflation or 3 or 4% as the Federal Reserve and government insists. And our government officials tell us we're running 12.5% inflation, wiping out the value of our currency, and people are going into T-bills. People going into T-bills will get the dollar back, but it will be worth 12% less when they get it back than, of course, when they put it in, if it's held for a year. We are in the early throes of an inflationary spiral. I just hope and pray that the Fed will intervene and raise the interest rates and stop pumping money out. I don't think they're going to do it. I think what they're going to do exactly what irresponsible governments have done down through the ages, and that is continue printing money.
Well, that was the comment. And one other thing, I was driving along the freeway, you see casino after casino signs. And that's another thing that troubles me quite a bit.
Yeah, well, of course, that gives people something to hope for. Of course, what they say is gambling is a tax on the stupid.
Thanks, Dr. Stan. I appreciate you being there.
God bless. Thanks so very much, and we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we were just talking to Ron from Richland, Washington, and he was simply saying he was at a meeting recently with some missionaries from Brazil who were talking about the inflationary spirals they'd seen there, and time again they would simply wipe out the value of the currency, and then they'd start in all over again, take three zeros off the end, and this has happened in South America time and time again. They understand inflation. Why, of course, they do not explain that to the American people, because up until recently, the dollar has been fairly stable. That is no longer the case, and everything the Federal Reserve System is doing is counterproductive. Would you agree with that, Melanie?
I agree, and I think what important Ron had to say was also about the amount of time that it takes to have your funds return to you. Whatever you get back is 3 years. And a lot of folks sort of distinguish the difference between banks and Wall Street. And folks, they are one of the same. So Wall Street, they're both the same, and it could take years for you to get your funds out of Wall Street also. So it is very important that it can go through legislation. It could go through litigation, and not only it could be longer than 3 years, depending on how the depth of severity that we see in the future. So, and you're right, Dr. Stan. People aren't aware. They don't understand inflation because we haven't been in this position, and everything has been again. It's all been part of the plan. People have been conditioned for so long. I remember working for savings and loans, and I said this time and time again, until they locked the doors, they continue to tell the depositors that everything was fine, that they don't have to worry about anything, that the government will take care of it. And they did that until they put the locks on the doors. So you're going to hear the same thing.
It was just a week ago when Henry Paulson was saying Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are perfectly all right. There's nothing to worry about. They're well capitalized. And he was lying because they already had plans, of course, to go to their aid when the whole system collapsed. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question, comment, you agree, you disagree, why, of course, we'd love to hear from you. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Hi, Stan. I just want to ask about Freddie and Fannie, how they're doing these days. But, no, really, when we hear about the Fed bailing them out, are they actually talking about a buyout, which means a private corporation, the Federal Reserve, buying out these so-called government-controlled private whatever you want to call them? Is it really a buyout instead of a bailout, and the Federal Reserve would take control?
Oh, do you want to respond to that, Melody?
I have a tendency to agree. I think they'll open the windows to where they'll be able to loan, but I think as far as buying the shares and so forth, yes, it will be owned by the Federal Reserve, which is a private corporation. And so, yes, it is, they will nationalize these companies.
Yeah, you're nationalized an organization that actually is government chartered, which is already a government organization. But what they're going to do, they're talking about lending them money, they're talking about buying additional stock. They have to recapitalize these organizations so they can continue lending money, so people can continue buying homes, those who are going to be in a position. The trouble is that they already hold so many loans that are faulty, that are certainly are not valid loans. Their loans were, people have bought homes and they couldn't afford to buy those homes. Some of these people bought homes, and they gave them they gave them an extra 25% for buying the home. In other words, they would do anything they could to get people to buy, and they would let them have the house with nothing down. And you do not, all you have to do is be able to make an X at the bottom of the page, and everybody was making money. The real estate person was making money. The people who issued the mortgage were making money. The people who were packaging those mortgages to sell to others were making money. And everybody, the appraisers were making money, and all of it was totally fallacious. And now, of course, you have not only Freddie May and Fannie Mae or Fannie Mae and Freddie Mae, whichever one it is, you know, that are holding all these faulty loans. But the entire financial system of the Western world is stuck with all these loans that are really beginning to default. So I believe, of course, it's going to be more of a bailout than a buyout. But it's 6-1 and half a dozen the others, far as I'm concerned, Mike.
Can I also ask about the gasoline subsidy?
Go right ahead.
Melody was talking about that a few minutes ago, talking about how the gas prices have been subsidized, if I'm saying this correctly, all along, and now that subsidy is going away and we'll be paying for it at the pump. Well, if it's been subsidized all along, we've been paying because we pay our taxes and the government has no money other than what it takes from us.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Melody, would you like to address the subject of government subsidies for gasoline?
I had one more step in the thought process.
All right, go right ahead.
Well, it just seems like the subsidy is nothing more than a clever way for the buddies in government to give their oil buddies money. And now we're going to pay double because if they cut out the subsidy, I don't think they're going to lower our tax rates as a result. So you're saying we'll be paying through the IRS and also at the pump. What do you think? It seems like that's the way it's going to go.
Well, Melody, want to comment on the government subsidies of oil production in the United States?
Well, I agree. I mean, everything that comes out of the government, it comes out of the taxpayer. You know, so it's just called fuzzy math in their way in order to funnel different funds to different areas, just like any other subsidy that, you know, the farmers are subsidized and so forth. So, you know, it does all come out, and it comes out right out of the printing presses and everything else, and this is why we are. So it's all so intermingled, and it's just different ways in which they show their accounting and the way that they want. Anymore, it's just, to me, it's just this or half a dozen other things, but you're absolutely correct.
And I think, first of all, we subsidize ethanol, which, of course, are adding to a great deal of gasoline. So we know that that's one subsidy. But a lot of the oil companies simply are drilling on government land, and they're supposed to pay a certain amount to the government, you know, in return for the oil that they're taking from beneath government ground. And a lot of times they're just not doing that. Or they've given them such sweetheart deals so that basically they're able to make tremendous profits and they're not paying a legitimate share to the government, which of course would tend to give the government more money so they wouldn't have to tax us so much. So there are all sorts of sweetheart deals between big oil and between government. There always have been, and I fear, Mike, that there always will be.
Well, sometimes I wish I was as smart as they are, but most of the time I'm glad I'm not.
And remember when Lee Raymond, who was, of course, the CEO of Exxon, actually retired, and I think he retired in 2005, they gave him a nice little going-away gift of $400 million. That was a special bonus on top of all the other bonuses he got. That was just for services rendered.
Well, I guess he's a smart guy, but I'm glad I'm not as smart as him.
I'm glad you're not. Okay, good night, Megan. Okay, that was Mike calling, and of course, we will welcome your calls from out across America or from the Central Coast here of California at 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Melody Cederstrom. Our telephone number, if you have a question or comment on the financial crisis that is sweeping not only the United States but the entire world. And remember, the reason that you're hearing about this, the reason you're reading about it, is because they want you to feel uncertain. They want you to feel panicky. They are manipulating your emotions. Once you understand that, of course, why of course, people can better evaluate what's going on, and what you have to do is be able to maintain your perspective, understand what's going on, and make your plans. Do not panic like most people are doing. Well, if you're up across America, the number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But before we go on, Melody, I want you to get out your website. I want you to get out your telephone number and tell people what they'll learn if they give you a call.
Okay. And, Dr. Stan, I want to thank you for telling people do not panic, but they should learn and take action. And because when you panic, sometimes you might not make the right decision and everything because you're in that panic. And I've been hearing a lot of things from my listeners and everything in which, you know, they are panicking. And certainly this is a time where we, you know, you do need to be very concerned. And I think we're going to see many changes. And this is important. It's happening. Our financial system, our economy, basically, as far as I'm concerned, from what I read and everything, is collapsing. You do need to take precautions. You do need to prepare. So you shouldn't wait any longer and do what you need to do. But I do want to thank you for telling the listeners, you know, do not panic.
And don't get into anything in the way of a speculation or, you know, a get-rich-fast scheme. I'd be totally conservative and just protect the value of your money. Don't worry about making a lot of money. Don't worry about the money you're going to make by your investment. Just preserve what you have. But you go ahead and get the information out on your business and certainly on your website and how people can contact you.
I'd like to give the website discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. That is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. And we have articles posted. You can also listen to our radio programs in our archive. And the interview that I spoke with David Bloom today is posted on the Tuesday interview there, so you can listen to that about alcohol running your vehicles. That's discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. If you have any questions, you can email us at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com, and of course, our telephone number is 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, I think it's interesting. Of course, the United States has the capacity, with all of the automotive companies here, to produce about 18 and a half million cars a year. They had cut back to about 14 million cars a year, and it looks like they're even going to cut back more than that. Even Toyota is having difficulty, you know, as far as moving their cars. And of course, I believe Toyota puts out a far better car than either Chrysler or Ford or General Motors, but there is a deluge. There's just an excess of cars on the car lots across this country. And in fact, I heard the other day somebody was advertising, I'd forgotten whether it was a Dodge, and you got $6,000 off. And then they gave you another $6,000 bonus, so you're going to get $12,000 off the sticker price. I certainly believe it's General Motors is selling their cars now to the individuals the same price that they would sell them to their employees, and of course giving them even discounts on that. Anything to move the cars, because of course they have to, according to the union contract, keep their production lines open, and General Motors is losing money on every car they sell. I saw over the 4th of July weekend that they were selling, the F-150 Ford pickup trucks at about $13,900, about $14,000. That's a phenomenal price. I don't think we'll ever see that again because, of course, as you know, they have within the last 3 weeks now increased the price of iron ore 85%, and the Rio Tinto, the largest certainly source of mining in the world today, worked out an agreement with the Chinese to increase the price of iron ore 85%. Now, why would they do that? There is certainly there is no shortage of iron ore. In fact, I think that probably the economy is beginning to slow down over in China. So why are they doing that? I think somebody wants to drive prices up. I think that what's happening with oil is manipulated. I think a massive increase in the price of iron ore is manipulated. It means we've gone up 5% or 10% or 30%, but 85%? Do you realize what that's going to mean a year down the line? Of course, it means anything that has related to steel is going to be up almost double, and anything that deals with iron is going to be almost double. And if you're going to be building a steel-reinforced building, the steel in that is going to be almost double what it has been in the past. The implications of this are frightening, and I don't think anybody's commenting on it. I think we're beginning to see the early stages of an inflationary spiral, and unless, of course, somebody has the courage to intervene in the Fed, and I don't see any evidence that they do, I think it's going to have a disastrous consequences. And within a year, of course, we could very well see a really rampant inflation wiping out the life savings of so many Americans. Our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Here in the Central Coast of California. Well, Melody, certainly, as you talk to people across, are the people aware of the implications of the inflation, do you think? Do they really understand what a 12% inflation means to them?
I don't think they do. Many do, but many don't. I think what woke them up is the banks. I believe with the bank failure last week, I believe with Bear Stearns, I believe with the market pulling down below 11,000, I believe those were a lot of a combination of items that sort of made them move their funds and to be concerned. I don't think they equate it with true inflation so much also with the falling dollar. They know the dollar is being devalued. And I'm talking to more and more people that haven't listened to shortwave for 10 years and truly know what's going on. They're just beginning to realize that there's some dangerous things going on, and they want to make changes and preserve their wealth and protect what they have. So to tie it directly to inflation, I don't think they really understand the depth and why it's happening. I can mention people complain about the gasoline prices and the prices of everything, and I'll discuss that it's goes right back to our fiat currency. I mean, that's the root of everything. I mean, this is why we are where we are today, and they just can't grasp. And I don't think I don't know if they can't or don't want to grasp it. But it's interesting, and it's interesting to hear what people say, and I think it's this Indy Mac and Bear Stearns that pretty much got everybody moving.
And of course, I think people have to understand that most of our major banks are in real financial trouble. I mean, yes, we're talking about a J.P. Morgan Chase. We're talking about WaMu, Washington Mutual, and they're really having some very real problems. But I mean, I was looking up Merrill Lynch the other day. They'd lost something like $60 billion, and of course we're going to lose another $6 billion, and certainly we know that other of the major Lehman Brothers is having real problems financially. These are the major banks, four or five major banks in the United States, and people do not understand our major financial institutions have bought all of these unperforming bonds, and of course many of them are really undercapitalized, and that is why the Federal Reserve is doing something they've never done before, and that is giving massive loans to the investment banks. They were only there to deal with the commercial banks, not with the investment banks, and what they're doing is subsidize people who've made terrible investments, and of course eventually it'll all be paid for by the American taxpayers, and of course even more than that by the destruction of the value of our currency. Well, I was interested, Cramer. Do you know who Cramer is, Melody?
Yes, I do.
And he put something out this last week where he said, sell everything you've got. And he's talking about people in the stock market. Up to this time, he's been bombastic, yelling as he does in his manner. But suddenly, he's beginning to realize what the problem we're in and trying to get people out of the stock market. But if enough people begin to vacate the stock market, it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, won't it?
Yes, it will. And he also mentioned a couple of weeks ago that the only thing known is gold and energy. Gold and oil, he said, I believe, was the two words. I know it was gold for sure, and I'm not sure if it was oil or energy. And he says that nobody wants to talk about it. And that was a couple of weeks ago. So he knew then, but, he gets paid by them, so, he's also limited to what he can and can't say, so...
Well, I was glad to see or hear him say what he did say, and I just hope people will begin to get themselves into a defensive position to protect themselves. And people, of course, they've got stocks. Maybe they made a profit on the stock. They don't want to pay capital gains, and they're just going to stick with it until all those capital gains are gone. And of course, as the stock falls, they lose their money. As the dollar falls, they lose their money. Of course, as inflation progresses, they lose their money. And people don't see how this all fits together. But I believe there's an organized effort to impoverish the middle class. And why do I say that? Because I read the plan. It's a global biodiversity assessment plan. It was published in 1995, coming out of the second Earth Summit there. And you can get it. It's published by Cambridge University Press, or get it at the university. Or you can read the summary of it in our Sustainable Development syllabus. And they talk about the necessity of lowering the living standards of people throughout the world. Now, these are the elite. These are the people who rule the countries of the world, who rule the people who rule the world. This is the elite. And the Global Biodiversity Assessment is the master plan for everything going on today. That, and of course, the Earth Charter, written by some of the wealthiest people in the world, where they talk about redistribution of wealth between nations, and that means, of course, taking the wealth of the American people and transferring it elsewhere. And that's, of course, why we're sending our factories overseas to China and elsewhere. And it's because with that goes the wealth, and most of our gross domestic product is really are buying things on credit. And of course, the time is very soon coming where we're not going to have the money to buy it on credit. The products are going to become increasingly expensive, and we're going to have to see, people here are going to have to change their buying patterns. Don't you agree, Melody?
Yes, I do agree. I do agree. And also, I just wanted to mention, too, when you were talking about the investments in stocks, and we talk about penalties and taxes, people shouldn't, when you're making an investment decision, don't allow penalties and taxes change your mind. Look what's best for you, because so often I hear, I don't want to pay those penalties now. I don't want to pay those taxes. So instead, they leave the funds in their investment group, and they know they're going to lose. So I don't understand why people are, yes, penalties hurt and taxes hurt. But, I mean, it's better to preserve what you have and not worry about those than to lose everything that you have just because you didn't want to pay the penalties and taxes. And you do have to look at what's suitable for you also.
And I certainly agree with that. And, of course, if you're out there listening audience, we've only got a few more minutes before we have to let Melody go. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And what are the people buying now? Are they buying primarily gold? Is anybody buying primarily silver? The people you're dealing with, what are they buying?
I encourage people to hold 80% gold and 20% silver. Gold is currency. It's going to be all about gold. This is what you want. Gold is the primary metal that you want to hold. Silver is good. It'll perform very well. It'll show good as a percentage increase. But gold is the monetary metal, so keep it 80-20. And, of course, if your investment objective is to carry a little more silver, that's okay, too. Some of my larger buyers carry less silver because of the bulk of the weight and the storage problems with silver. So, you know, keep it basic. I keep my investments basic, simple, so that you understand what you're purchasing and you know what you're getting and why you're getting it, so you can continue making wise decisions in your gold and silver portfolios. There are lots of opinions out there. People who just send emails, I'm surprised at the emails I get with opinions on telling the other emailers what they should buy when it comes to gold and silver. And I'm also beginning to see larger premiums that's not necessary yet on gold and silver products. So as the market gets tighter and we see more people go in and take in physical delivery of products, a gold and silver product, you will see shortages in the products. They will become tight. And as that product becomes tighter, yes, you're going to see increased premiums. I don't see a reason at this point in time to have any increased premiums, but I'm beginning to see it from a lot of my competitors. Just like today, I quoted a box of 500 silver eagles. My price was over $400 lower than one of my competitors. So they're beginning to show the premiums on things. So that's another thing. I hate to say get it while you can, but that's pretty much the way it will be as this thing heats up.
Well, we've got Mary calling from Stamford, New York. Is that right, Mary?
It's Stamford.
Stamford, okay. That's the way my producer produced it. So Stamford, New York. Where is that? Is that fairly close to Utica or Attica?
It's about 2 hours from Utica.
Okay. Are you hearing us on that station, or are you hearing us on the Internet or shortwave?
On 101.9.
Okay, very good. That's a good, great, that's a great station. Well, anyway, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I did. Given, you know, the way things are shaping up, what do you recommend that someone 20, 25 years from retirement does with a 401k, where, you know, you don't have the option of moving it into something like gold? Unless I cash out the 401k, but like I said, you know, I'm 45. I've got a long way to go.
Well, you do have a little ways to go. Check to see if you have any access to which you can roll it over to an IRA.
Can you roll it over to an IRA or not?
I don't know.
All right, go ahead.
I think if I left the company, I could.
All right.
But while I'm still in active service, I don't know how that would work. How is an IRA different?
Well, you could roll it over into an IRA. You can place precious metals into an IRA. You can actually place some gold in there. Now, it might not be the best scenario, but
mm-hmm.
at least you would preserve some of your paper assets and you'd trade that into gold.
Okay.
And the gold would be stored. So I would check with your 401k plan to see if you have access. Sometimes you can have access to some cash. Sometimes if you can have some to roll it over to an IRA. So I would check.
Now, is this self-directed 401k? In other words, do you have anything to say about where it's invested? Or
yeah.
Or they just
yeah.
invested for you?
No, they give us, like, I don't know, 10 or 12 choices, anything from your high-risk stocks down to your, you know, your most stable mutual funds.
Okay.
Or bonds.
Well, what would you say to her? Any other advice at all?
Just see if you can get access to it.
Well, I can take out a loan against it, but then I have to pay that back out of my paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
So that doesn't really help.
And it depends on how much is in your 401.
Yeah,
also.
I think I've got about 60,000.
Okay, but you can't buy gold, or at least physical gold, with a 401k.
Yeah.
Hang on there for just a minute. Okay, fine. Anything else you want to say before we let Mary go?
401s are tough because they do control your funds, but see if you can get access to it. Might be worth taking a loan, depending on what you have to pay back, and get gold with the rise of gold. At least you're preserving some of your wealth. At least you're preserving some of what you have in there,
yeah.
or you'll end up losing it.
Right.
And it's not any good anyway.
Right. So the idea of rolling it into a 401k would be then I could turn it into gold.
Roll it into an IRA, right.
Yeah.
A self-directed IRA.
Okay.
Well, you can just do half of it, but I mean, you should be doing something.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Mary. Good to know that you're listening. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Okay, fine. Well, we've only got about 2 minutes for you to wrap up the program there. So what thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners this evening, Melody?
Well, I'd like to give my number, 800-375-4188, and if you have any questions, one thing I know, everything carries a risk, and I believe right now gold carries the least amount of risk, and it's so important. As you said, Dr. Sten, you can't worry about profits. You can't worry about the windfall. You can't worry about the pie in the sky. You need to keep what you have. Because when this all settles and there's dust and I view other investment opportunities will come along, owning gold will allow you to go in there and make the real wealth. So you want to keep what you have. That is so important. Just beware of so many things that you hear. There's a lot of misinformation out there. A lot of misquoted prices on programs that I hear, it makes my skin crawl. So just be careful when you're out there and you're price shop your prices. And if something doesn't make sense to you, you don't want to go through with it. You want to acquire as much gold as possible when you're making your purchases. So if someone's trying to sell you a $5,000 coin, that doesn't make a lot of sense if you're trying to acquire as much gold as possible for your dollars. Same way with fractional pieces. The smaller you go in the size, the more you're going to pay for your gold. So in your initial investments, you don't want fractional pieces. You want to get the larger pieces. because you want to get as much gold as possible. Don't buy gold to protect you just from confiscation. You know, I hear just because a coin is dated pre-33, you're protected from confiscation. Folks, that's hogwash. You know, it's not written anywhere just because a coin is dated pre-33. If they were going to confiscate gold again this time, they would change all the laws to make it fit in today's terms. So anything that was written in 33, you really can't go by. You have to look at today's, and you also have to, everything is just sort of, it's an opinion, and it has to be viewed and studied. And
hold that thought for just a moment, Melody. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's been Melody Cedars. For Melody, let's get out your telephone number and your website one more time.
800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And the website is discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. discountgoldandsilvertrading.net.
All right. Thank you very much, Melody. Good night. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. God bless.
And you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. And Chris, that's Melody Cedarstrom. I should point out that Melody does support Radio Liberty, and, of course, we support her. We think she does a good job, and we've never had one person call us to complain about Melody, and that's a lot I can say about her. Some of the other people who are no longer with us here at Radio Liberty, we find somebody that certainly is not taking good care of our listeners, why they're not going to continue to be on this, and we've unfortunately there are a lot of people in the gold and silver business who are not dependable. We have two people that with us, that Melody is one of them, that we think will treat our listeners well. Let me also say, do not get into speculations. One of our listeners said somebody had advised them to actually get into a speculative stock, and of course it was supposed to be doing great, and I'm sure maybe the fellow who got them into it really believed it was going to do great. This is not the time, however, to be in anything of a speculative nature. Get into things that are solid and that will maintain their value, and whether it be certainly gold or silver or those related assets, either this country or elsewhere. And remember, they're going to have exchange controls very, very soon, so you're not going to be able to get any funds out of the United States, or possibly even bring them back into the United States. Who knows what's going to happen? We're living in very uncertain times. Do not panic. Understand that this has been planned for a long period of time. And, of course, protect yourself. Understand the ultimate plan is the destruction of the middle class. And, of course, if you're part of the middle class, don't let them succeed, at least as far as you're concerned. So, certainly if you've not, of course, seen my talk on the financial tsunami, let me recommend that along with the syllabus. We have two pamphlets, inexpensive. One is called The History of Money. The other is called The Financial Meltdown. And, of course, the compilations of our newsletters, you can get this all at RadioLiberty.com, or you can get the pamphlets. But the pamphlets is just a convenient way to have it and to go over it and to reread it. And then, of course, we also carry the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Vitally important for you to understand how this whole fraudulent monetary system was created by the bankers. It created by the bankers, for the bankers, to enrich the bankers and enslave the people. But what everybody has missed is the spiritual forces behind what's going on. And until you understand the working of the spiritual hierarchy, and I use that term because that's the title of a pamphlet put out by the people who worship the other God. And of course, if you get into the items, and if you specifically request the pamphlet, The Workings of the Spiritual Hierarchy, you will find that they say they have agents planted in both the East and the West. In other words, certainly in the communist countries and in the Western countries, and working in finance and, of course, government and in education and media. This is what they say. Not what I say. The working of the spiritual hierarchy, certainly if you've not yet seen our three pamphlet set, The Occult Hierarchy, go up on the internet and, of course, look up the word occult hierarchy, Google it in, you'll find, of course, our reference to our material is right at the top of the page, out of literally hundreds of thousands of other sites. So then, of course, we do hope that many of you will want to get my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness. That is a DVD or video, my talk on The Forbidden Secret. And, of course, we have a new one. It's called Secret Knowledge. They're DVDs. But they will give you insight into these forces that work behind the scenes within the shadows and describe the spiritual forces that are at work behind the scenes. And then, of course, the talk and the syllabus on the planned police state. Please, if you possibly can get the information, feel free to copy it. Feel free to get it out as far and wide as you can. And if you copy it right. Get good copies and get the information out. Send people to our website, RadioLiberty.com, where they can see many of our videos and our other videos. And then pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be those of Barry Shamish, who's a Jewish patriot, who, of course, had written extensively when he lived in Israel about corruption there, about the assassination of the Prime Minister Rabin, about, of course, the other assassinations, and about the total corruption at every level of the government of Israel, because, of course, Israel today is led by people who are not loyal to Israel, but to a different agenda. Well, that is the background. Barry, it's good to have you with us tonight.
Always a pleasure.
Well, what are we going to be talking about?
It was another busy week.
All right, well, tell us about it.
Well, today would be Wednesday in Israel. I think it's about 11 o'clock they're planning to make their exchange with Hezbollah. They're going to get two bags of bones. And for those two bags of bones, they're giving up a child murderer. Kuntar is his name. And five living terrorists.
And I guess this one terrorist, though, this first one, is one of the most vicious of all the terrorists. Why would you give a five terrorists to get back two bags of bones? That doesn't make sense.
Oh, they're giving up way more than that. That's just what they're giving up tomorrow. They also promised to release an undisclosed number of Palestinians. But you've got a darn good question, because this is a victory for a man who murdered three children. And viciously slamming their heads against a rock, drowning him, a vicious murderer. But they get him back. And why Israel would do such a stupid thing, I don't know. You've got a situation where they'll tell you Jewish morality is just better than Islamic morality, and we bury our dead. But there's a fact that, we should understand now. The Almaghor Terror Victims Association released a report, and they disclosed that since 2000, the year 2000, 180 Israelis have been killed by terrorists released in exchanges.
okay, just in exchange of, and the number of wounded by them is in the thousands, apparently. Now, what Israel's going to get, they're going to get their Jews. And that's what they're going to get for this exchange. 180 dead Israelis killed by terrorists, released in prisoner of war. That's a joke. These aren't prisoners of war. They're not soldiers. They don't belong to a nation. They're terrorists. Whatever happened to the old Israel that refused to negotiate with terrorists?
Well, of course, that Israel doesn't belong, doesn't exist anymore. And, of course, the thing is, of course, if they did what was right, you wouldn't have the terrorists. After all, if you play marbles and you end up with all the marbles, then the marble game is over. You got to give the other people marbles so they can keep the game going. You got to give them back terrorists so they can keep this. And it's a vicious game, of course, a deadly game. But unfortunately, people can't understand. When you see something that doesn't make sense, there has to be a logical explanation. And you get in the background of who's been funding these terrorist organizations for a long period of time. And I suspect there's been within the people, this small clique who runs Israel and the small clique who runs our government, we've been funding the terrorist movement. We carry a book called The Devil's Game, pointing out who financed Hamas initially. Why was the American CIA in Israel? And now, of course, we're so concerned about Hamas, these wicked terrorists, but where did they come from? Well, you need to understand the history to understand what's going on today, because otherwise, nothing makes sense. You go right ahead, Barry.
Oh, that was a quick commercial. All right. Well, there's one little item that confused me, but it's there. When this exchange takes place, which will be in a matter of 5 hours or so, Hezbollah is going to be building rainbows along the Israeli border, opposite Russian Ikra. They're going to put a, there's a big mountain there. They're going to put a rainbow to, in celebration of getting Sami Kuntar, back, so that all of Israel can see how happy they are to get the murderer back. They're just rubbing salt in the wounds, but it's a new strategy. You want to demoralize, and by the way, the Israeli people, they are human. They know their government. Why did the government cabinet agree to this with only three abstentions? I can understand what they told the cabinet. It's one thing that Olmert is trying to divert attention from himself, but it was a cabinet decision, and it was a horrible cabinet decision, and yet somebody must have something on them to make them agree to a terribly demoralizing prisoner exchange that will be taking place today.
Well, I share your concern, Barry, and I realize how strongly you feel about it, but there's nothing we can do, and so we just have to watch it and hope that maybe, as we point out the absurdity of this, we'll get people to realize that nothing as it appears to be.
Yeah, well, it gets even weirder. Every week it's just a little stranger. We found out this week that Hezbollah, who will be getting, of course, the bodies, no, they'll be getting live bodies. Israel gets dead bodies. Hezbollah gets the terrorists, is receiving, well, for their missiles aimed at Israel, the 40,000 missiles they now are receiving from North Korea, nerve and mustard gas.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, isn't that great? And you know, Jews don't like gas being thrown at them. They're bad memories. This is the last thing that Israel will tolerate because of its history, in theory, by the way, it used to be that way, is gas being lobbed at it. And Hezbollah's got nerve gas from North Korea, but that's not all. This week it was announced that Syria has given Hezbollah radar to track
The whole of the New Yorkers Berries is talking about how that certainly that Hezbollah, which is of course stationed in Lebanon, has recently gotten a nerve gas and mustard gas, or is that from North Korea? Now that Syria is going to be providing things, now why would Hezbollah want nerve gas and mustard gas? Unless of course they're going to use it on the Jews. And but don't worry, of course the Jews don't have any gas masks. The government came in and took away the gas masks from a lot of the people, saying we're going to get right back. And then they just didn't have enough money to get them refurbished, so an awful lot of Jews over there don't have any gas masks. Why would you do something that stupid unintentionally, unless maybe there are people working at the highest level of the Jewish government who want to kill off a majority of the Jews? It doesn't make sense. Otherwise, can you give me a better explanation, Barry?
No. And nerve gas, by the way, is a ghastly way to go.
Right.
I remember the Army, we put on gas masks and suits. For nerve gas, you have to be covered everywhere. And you have this needle that you stick in your thigh that prevents total atrophy. I mean, you actually become a living corpse with nerve gas. And the thought is just simply dreadful. But there's other good news. Syria gave Hezbollah radar to track Israeli jets.
Where would Syria get radar? But they're not sophisticated enough to make that. That's got to come from Russia, from Korea.
Well, sure. I would guess Russia. And I'll tell you why I'm going to guess Russia. They didn't give the type of radar. They said the radar works from the Golan to the Mediterranean, and look, if Hezbollah knows that planes are coming, they aren't caught off guard. They can actually shoot SAM-7s, Stingers. Once you know the planes are on the way, you prepare for them. And that little extra edge is going to make them all that much stronger in the upcoming war. Now, the reason I'm going to mention something of great interest. This article, by the way, came from a favorite writer of mine, Edwin Black. He wrote the transfer agreement. Very famous writer who exposed the whole labor Zionist Nazi coordination during the 1930s.
Could you explain to our listeners just quickly what the transfer agreement is, because it's so vitally important?
One of these years, I must do a show on the Holocaust.
All right, fine.
There was an agreement signed between the Jewish Agency of Jerusalem in 1933 and the Nazis. It was called the transfer agreement. In that agreement, the Jewish Agency agreed to take in all the Jews that Germany could supply to Palestine. They were given a free hand to make life so miserable that the Jews would have to come to Palestine. And those Jews who didn't want to go to Palestine, which was almost all of them, their boats would be turned back worldwide. It was an agreement, first of all, to ban all Jewish organizations. In 1932, there were 250 organizations representing German Jewry. In 1934, there was one, labor Zionism. Now, once the Jews got to Israel, well, their money was to be spent only on German goods. And there were other clauses, like the Jewish Agency would stop all boycotts, all embargoes worldwide. It was a dastardly agreement between the Jews and the Jews. The Jewish Agency, the Chaim Weizmann, and Edwin Black wrote the book called The Transfer Agreement. He's certainly a well-known writer. But let's get back to Edwin Black.
Okay, fine.
One of these days we'll do the Holocaust. There's a lot more there than people understand.
Could we do that next week? Would you start thinking about maybe next week's program? I'd really like to get that because it's so vitally important that people understand that the Jews tried to come to the United States, and of course Franklin Delano Roosevelt wouldn't let them come in. They tried to go to Great Britain, and of course the British elite there wouldn't let them come in. So the Jews had two choices, either go to Israel or die in Germany, and an awful lot of them didn't understand that their leaders were betraying them to a horrible, horrible death. And it was only the horror of the Holocaust that got a lot of the Jews then to be willing to go to Israel. Nothing as it appears to be, but maybe that's for another evening. Go ahead.
I wrote Holocaust on my little piece of paper. I'll prepare a show on the Holocaust next week, barring no tremendous... there's always tremendously depressing news out of Israel. It's a very depressing place. The people I've been speaking to from there have tremendous misgivings. They don't understand how this could have happened, how their state could have sunk so low. But it did. I mean, you can complain about America and its sinking economy and lots of things to complain about, but Israel, they feel the end is coming. And which, by the way, is not a stupid feeling. What Edwin Black wrote is a major article this week about the Israeli... Remember, I said I didn't believe for a minute that test in the Mediterranean, that 1,500-mile test over Greece, all through the Mediterranean, was, as reported, a dry run for an attack on Iran. I didn't like that the New York Times was leaked a thing like this. Well, it turns out that the New York Times were a decoy. Edwin Black claims that the Greeks bought from Russia the S-300 anti-aircraft system, the same system that the Iranians have. And what he claims is that the test that the Israelis were testing the S-300 and not testing a trip to Iran, which is a ridiculous proposition. To fly to Iran from Israel to Tehran is 1,500 miles. It didn't make sense to me. Now, testing the Russian system now does make sense because another incident, which is getting a fair amount of play, and this is a very rational way to attack Iran. Imagine that America let Israel use its Iraqi air bases to attack Iran. Now that makes sense already. Okay, that's like being at home. Apparently, that's what's happening. Now again, I'm depending on just my astute reading of information, but what they're saying is Israel has been spending the last couple of weeks doing practice runs from American Iraqi bases, and now I don't know what's leaked and what's not leaked, but what's leaked and what's real, but what is leaked is that Israel is not planning a one-off air attack on Iran. What they're planning is a week-long total destruction of Iran using 100 planes. That's the reports I've been getting. Have you heard these reports?
Well, we've heard all sorts of things. I haven't heard that specific report that they were planning a week-long attack. I mean, what we've heard, but this is only in the past, is that, of course, Israel was going to hit the nuclear sites over there, in other words, where they have the nuclear enrichment, never that they were going to try to destroy all of Iran. But I will tell one story that I did hear, that it comes from something called the Iran Monitor, which I take comes from the Foreign Policy Association, and there they were talking about out the fact that the Iranian government is building 320,000, they're digging 320,000 graves. They're digging 320,000 graves and covering them over that they'll be ready. Of course, the government over in Iran is saying, we're digging these graves for the foreign soldiers because they're going to attack us, and that's why we're digging the graves so we can dispose of the bodies. And of course, anybody believes that, everybody, of course, probably would buy the book and dredge, because obviously the Iranians know those are going to be civilian casualties. So they're expecting massive civilian casualties. They're planning on disposing of the bodies. Not a word of that in the media, American media, but these articles coming out of the Iranian publications picked up by the Iranian monitor, by the Iran monitor, and we'll be glad to provide the documentation for the skeptics out there. Go right ahead,
Bill. Well, don't forget that Iran is supplying Hezbollah, and the Hezbollah, and I believe have a pretty good relationship going with North Korea. Hezbollah, the same week that the report that Israel is practicing in Iraq, which is, believe me, an awful lot more logical than flying 1,500 miles.
And of course, the other thing is, of course, if the United States allows Israel to use its air bases to attack Iran, then Iran will be justified in launching their missiles or their submarine torpedoes, whatever they have, on the American aircraft carriers over there. And all you need to do would be to take down one American aircraft carrier to whip up the anti-war feelings here in the United States, and would say, we're going to have to go to war with Iran. Look, they took down one of our aircraft carriers. And of course they'd be doing it in reprisal, because we'd helped the attack on their country, and then we could have a nice war over there in the Middle East. And I believe
as noted, it's not so easy. There are a lot of waterproof compartments on an aircraft carrier. It's not that easy to bring down, but do you remember in 1989, the USS Stark was cut in half by a Scud missile.
Right.
So a lot of damage could be done. But again, it also explains the gas being delivered to Hezbollah this week. If, in fact, the Iranians are attacked by Israel, Israel is attacked with gas.
And, Chris, one thing that's been mentioned, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but if we were at war with Iran, who would you rather have in the White House? John McCain, a naval veteran, or Barack Obama?
Obama.
Okay, go right ahead, Barry.
Yeah, we don't want the songbird in power, and we don't want a bomb in power. It's meaningless to me. It really is. But we're looking at a week that Hezbollah gets nerve gas, and Israel is practicing on American air bases in Iraq, after having tested the C-300 anti-aircraft system over Greece. All of that is a lot more logical than all of these weeks and months that Israel is going to fly 1,500 miles and then return home somehow. That doesn't make sense at all. Well, this is starting to make sense, unfortunately. Now, you know, of course, that Olmert is really going down now.
For our listeners, of course, Olmert is the Prime Minister of Israel. He's being investigated by the police for sending graft and corruption.
Well, I reported on the exact same crimes that he did in 1987. I had a book called The Fall of Israel, which was published in England in 1991, where Olmert was investigated by the state controller for travel fraud. Well, he's doing it again, but this is really ugly. Israelis are using the word despicable, magil in Hebrew, to describe what Olmert did. What would happen? Olmert would be invited to speak by some organization, doesn't matter what, legitimate, and they would send him a first-class ticket. What he would do is he would go to other organizations and not report that he had received a ticket already, and he would just take out the money for the tickets, for the speech he would be giving. Let's say he goes to Los Angeles speaks at the Simon Wiesenthal Center. He would take the tickets, and then he stole from the following organizations and put the money in his back pockets. Akeem, the Israeli a charity for retarded children, he stole from them. Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial, he stole from them. Libby, that's the soldiers, the Wounded Soldiers Association. Akeem is handicapped children. All of them he robbed. And this came out, what was it, 2 days ago, that's all. 2 days ago, the police investigated his trips, and they found out that he would double and triple take on every trip he took by taking the expense money out of government charities. And this is, well, despicable is not the word, the word for this. Okay, you're taking money literally from handicapped children, the mentally retarded, Holocaust survivors, wounded soldiers, and look, these people are sociopaths. Olmert is a sociopath. He would not say he saw, he's defending himself with all his heart and soul. They traced, by the way, some of the tickets to his son Ariel, the homosexual living in Paris, who received free tickets from his father.
Hold that thought, Barry. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is simply pointing out, because at Olmert, the Prime Minister of Israel is being investigated by the police, he would actually be invited to travel through, say, Los Angeles to give a talk by the Simon Wiesenthal Center. They would send him a ticket, and then he would go to other charitable organizations over there in Israel, and then he would get, of course, money from them. Maybe not only duplicate money, but two or three times from two or three organizations, and then he would put the money in his pocket to cover the ticket that he already had been sent. And of course, this is all coming out now. He's a crook, but he's always been a crook. So why at this time in history is it coming out, Barry? They had to have known about this for a long time.
Well, again, I return to the main question. We had we're about to have a horrible prisoner exchange, but Olmert, it was a government decision. As crooked as Olmert is, how does the rest of the government play ball? There's a bigger question going on here. Okay? Olmert was always a crook. Sharon was always a crook. They have Menachem Begin and Yitzhak Shamir, I guess. He allowed a lot of corruption, but he was personally very honest, lived a very modest life. They were the last honest prime ministers. Since then, it's been nothing but crooks. Now, do I have time?
You go right ahead. I'll tell you. Don't you worry.
Okay. Now, there's another issue, and there's a personal story behind it as well. Yediot Ahronot, that's the country's biggest newspaper, put out a headline showing the synagogue in Atzmona. Atzmona was in Gush Katif, or Jewish Gaza. Now, when Gaza was evacuated, the synagogues were left standing, and they were supposed to be the people, the Jews, did not want the Arabs getting anywhere near those synagogues, but the government for some reason left them standing. And there are issues here, there's plenty of issues. I've got a book called Bye Bye Gaza, where you go into how much the government hated the religious and the atrocities committed against the religious. I'm going to do a quick plug. Go to lulu.com for Bye Bye Gaza and lulu.com, just write my name, Chamish, that's Chamish, and get this book, Bye Bye Gaza, and you'll see really what an atrocity was. But Yediot Ahronot put a picture of the Atzmona synagogue with the so-called soldiers. They are not soldiers. Hamas and Islamic Jihad do not have a country. They're, They're terrorists all over again, but they're practicing urban warfare in the Atzmona Shul. They're taking a house of prayer and practicing ways to kill Jews in cities. And, well, what are you going to say? The Israelis were shocked. It was on the front page. All of that is almost daily now. Every day there's another demoralizing, deeply hurtful image or policy, and the people, my poor people, what they have to go through to live in Israel, the sadness and the frustration and the worry, but using a shul to train in urban warfare got people extremely mad. Now, as for Islamic Jihad, I have a sort of unfortunate story, but it's a true one, and I'm not ashamed, but I'm not terribly proud of it. This story involves a dead soldier. His name was Ariel Weiss. What happened was, well, first of all, let's go 2 weeks before. Ariel Weiss's mother gathers all the steak restaurants and cookie restaurants, and she in the city of Renana, and they all donate to give her son's unit in Nablus a fantastic meal, and she writes about it in the Jerusalem Post, how they, these soldiers were so grateful to have a shawarma and a falafel and a Coke. And as soon as I read that thing that day, I said, what are they, nuts? They also had Ariel Weiss's picture in the paper. I said, what is the Post gone bonkers here? You don't do that. This isn't World War II where there's a massive front and nobody knows anybody. These people, the Arabs know the soldiers. They pass by them in the streets every day. You don't do a thing like this.
All right, we'll be back in just a moment.
Bye.
Okay, Barry, go right ahead. Of course, what you're talking about, of course, is what they've done is they've put this soldier's picture in the paper, and he's sort of
his mother's article.
Right, and so this is a very much patriotic Israeli, but of course there's the Arab component living in Israel who hates the Jews, and of course, so what happened?
She wasn't Israeli. She was a new immigrant to Israel from Texas.
Okay.
And she wants, between us, she didn't know she was in Israel. She didn't know the rules of the game. Her son was a soldier, and she was proud of him and wanted the world to know. I don't blame her, though. There are plenty of mothers out there proud of their sons. I blame the Jerusalem Post for passing this horrible article without going to the military censor, who would have banned it, outright banned it. Nonetheless, 2 weeks later, to the day, there's trouble in Nablus. There's rock throwing and a ruckus, and, well, this boy's unit was predictably called in to put down this trouble. And he was lured, into a building where he was shot dead in the courtyard. And the next day in the paper, I mean, this is bad enough. And believe me, the parents, his father was Rabbi Stuart Weiss. I spoke to him on the phone. It was sad. He did not want to believe that article led to his son's death. And my purpose was to warn other Jews not to repeat this mistake again. This is not the kind of war. It's an urban war. You pass the enemy in the street day after day. you don't do a moralizing story. The Arabs are trying to demoralize Israel. The last thing they want is a moralizing story. And the son died. He was killed by Islamic Jihad. The same people practicing urban warfare in the Asmona synagogue. Now, look, I met Stuart Weiss, never forgave me. He thought I was blaming his wife. I told him on the phone, I said, I never ever blamed your wife. I said, I blamed the Jerusalem Post. They should have known better. Whatever editor passed that story should be fired immediately. I don't blame your wife. It didn't help.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment as we bring our other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Barry telling the story of this Israeli soldier, and his mother had been very, very proud of him. And, of course, they'd had this big celebration for all the people in his unit in Nablus. And then not within a couple of weeks, why, there was some civil unrest and rock-throwing in Nablus. Of course, the soldier's unit was called in. He was lured into a building, and he was shot in Barry Fields. Of course, this was an effort, of course, to demoralize the Jews. And, of course, here was a story in the Jerusalem Post that made Jews feel proud, you know, we're backing our soldiers, you know, and our noble soldiers. And so what happens? Of course, this young man gets killed. And Barry's feeling was the Jerusalem Post never should have published that article because that made that young man, they put his picture in the paper, now he's the target of the Jews, of the Arabs. And if the terrorists can destroy him, they will tend to even more demoralize the Jewish people. And you have to understand they're using the techniques that Sun Tzu laid out thousands of years ago when he said to fight and conquer in all of your battles is not supreme excellence. Supreme excellence is to defeat the enemy without fighting. And, of course, certainly these terrorist activities are not the true act of war, but they can be just as effective and just as deadly. And they're playing games with the minds of the Israeli people and the Israeli military, and they're doing the same thing here in America today. So pick the story up there, Barry.
Well, the Post ran a story when he was killed. Front page, just a coincidence that 2 weeks ago we did a feature article written by his mother on his armored unit. They targeted him and they killed him. Now, it gets kind of worse even. I didn't apologize to the father. I didn't do anyone harm, but he felt that I was attacking his wife. And by the way, I was by accident. If she hadn't have written this story, which belonged in a dopey rural American magazine at best, certainly not in an Israeli paper, he'd be alive today if she hadn't written that story. But again, there are rules of the media, and the Post broke them. And I tried to put it in perspective, but he lost his son. He had a beautiful son. You know, Israel is a very sad place. And it's not an easy thing to write from Israel. And I did it for 32 years, and not a lot of it was all that happy. Now, it got worse. I was selling books at the Jerusalem Book Fair. Very big event, yearly event. And his sister, Ariel Weiss's sister, comes up to me and starts screaming, she introduced herself and says, how could you write what you wrote? I said, look, if it saves other lives, it was a mitzvah, it was a good thing. She said, not one word was true, it was all a lie. And I said to her, Islamic Jihad, the next day, claimed they killed Ariel Weiss by name. They claimed they killed your brother by name. And they did, by the way. And it was international news that Islamic Jihad were proud of killing Ariel Weiss. I said, your brother... And it's a sad thing, it's a very sad thing, but he was targeted because he was moralizing the Jewish people, and their job is to demoralize the Jewish people. And this took all the air out of that article your mother wrote, and she walked away. I offered her free books. I said, I'm sorry, it wasn't an attack on you. And she walked away, I think shocked by that I wouldn't give in. She wanted me to agree with her that it was all a lie. But I don't write lies. It was not a lie. But this is what you get living in Israel. It's not a happy place to write from. It truly is not.
Well, Chris, when you tell the truth there, it's not very popular with a lot of people, but your job is to tell the truth, and my job is to tell the truth, and to try to get people to see that we're involved in a war. The war you're concerned about is a war intent upon destroying Israel. My concern is the war to destroy the United States and Israel, and I believe they're all interrelated.
Well, I've got another story of people who were very close to me. Their son got sent to prison yesterday for 15 months. His name is Shimshon Citrin. Now, I know his parents very well. We still correspond all the time. They were amongst my first, fans, right from the beginning. I told them the truth again. They chose not to believe me. Their son was sentenced for attempting to kill an Arab. This was in Gush Katif. This was on July 29th of 2005. It was when the Shabak police agent, his name is Itmar Ben-Gvir, rushed the hotel. Maon Hayam was the name of the hotel. Immediately put a big sign on the side of the hotel, Muhammad is a pig. Like the Arabs would like that. It's something they want to wake up and tell their family, look, Mohammed's a pig. that's not a provocation or anything. Ben-Gvir was taken away by the police, nobody knows why, and then the Arabs naturally reacted. I mean, naturally. If you have a sign that says Mohammed is a pig facing your little town, then you're going to get a reaction. In this riot, Shimshon Citrin may have shot, may not have shot. I've read the different versions. The Arab was not hurt. There's nobody hurt. Yesterday he was sent to prison for 15 more months after sitting in prison for 7 months. I know the family. They are not killers. Marilyn and Arnold Citrin, they're like everybody's aunt and uncle. There is no criminality in that family. So now I have and by the way, I might just talk about the fact that his brother, Shmuel Citrin, I defended him. He was sent to prison for 9 months for identifying Yigal Amir's partner, Avishai Raviv. He put posters up in Hebron that Avishai Raviv was a member of the Shabak, which he was. This was just before the Rabin murder in September of 95. He was arrested, never charged, sat 9 months. In the winter, he broke his leg, and he was put in isolation and froze with a broken leg lying on the floor. People, if you don't know how bad the situation is, these are friends of mine going to prison now, friends of mine.
Okay, fine. Well, before we go on, Barry, why don't you get out your website? Why don't you tell listeners how they can get your books, how they can get your DVDs, and how they get to your website?
Sure, why don't we do that? Look, the books, if you want to know about the Gaza pullout and what was really behind it, not the nonsense you got on TV that was used for peace, you get my book, Bye Bye Gaza. It's at lulu.com, L-U-L-U.com. There's a little box that says, first write my name in there. C-H-A-M-I-S-H, that's Chamish, and you'll see a bunch of my books, but you should look at that book. My website is barrychamish.com. You go to the articles section, you'll you'll find some pretty interesting things in the article section about Gush Katif as well. I'm going to give you a phone number. I have DVDs. Some of them, none of them are sold on Lulu. So if you, I'll tell you what they are, including, of course, the Vatican's New Crusade Against Jerusalem and Return of the Giants. The number there is 904-315-8079,
904-315-8079, and that should pretty well do it. All right, very good. The books are really fascinating. We recommend them to you. So go right ahead.
Well, I've got two more little issues that we should look at. This one about Gush Katif again is so fantastic.
Now, for our listeners, Gush Katif is really Gaza, and this was, of course, the settlers there, many of them have been there 30 or 40 years, were forced by the Israeli government to give up their homes and give up their, the greenhouses and turn them over to the Arabs so that the Hamas could come in and use that as a base for lobbing missiles and mortar fire into southern Israel. It doesn't make sense. Why would you want to turn over a very productive part of Israel to the Arab terrorists? But of course, there is an effort on the part of the leaders of Israel to betray Israel. And when you understand that, so much of what's going on really makes sense. And to create a situation where Israel is totally undefensible, there's no way Israel's going to be able to survive, at least without divine intervention. So you go right ahead, Barry.
Well, the Arabs, hundreds of them now. Now, remember, these people left without compensation. They live in shoddy trailer camps, rat-filled, cockroach-filled trailers. The Arab farmers are suing their former employers of Gush Katif for not giving them compensation when they lost their jobs. They're actually suing these people. Now, you would think that's ridiculous. These people didn't voluntarily leave. They didn't want to leave themselves. It's their fault that their employers, I'm sorry, their employees don't have a job. Well, the government went with the Gush Katif. The Gaza went with the Arabs. The government refused to fight the case, provide legal help. The Arabs are suing the Gush Katif farmers for releasing them from their jobs. I mean, I don't know if you can imagine how stupid that is, but that's really happening in Israel.
We live in a world gone mad, Barry, and unless you understand that, nothing makes sense. Go ahead.
Well, there's one other issue I'm going to talk about that I should have talked about before, and I'll probably return to it another time. When we're living in tough economic times, it can be manipulated. And the reason I know this is because in the 1980s, when Menachem Begin was prime minister, it began around 84 or 5 or so. Inflation in Israel went through the roof. I remember it was just like a Weimar Republic. It hit about 500%, which means that every single day prices went up, your money went down, and people thought that was a natural occurrence, that Israel should be the highest inflation of any first world country in the world. Well, I did a little research into this, and it was to get Begin out of power. It was done on purpose. And the two bad guys in this awful story are Mikhail Bruno. He was the head of the Bank of Israel. He reduced interest so drastically that anyone could borrow. Anyone. There'd be no harm. It was like getting money at almost no interest.
Sounds just like Alan Greenspan, doesn't it? Go ahead.
Oh, I think it was even more drastic.
Okay. Well, that brings back to the interest rates down to 1%, so that's pretty
1%?
1%, yes. He kept it there for a year. 1%.
Then it's Alan Greenspan.
Right, okay.
Right, if it's that low. Now, Yoram Eridor was the finance minister. He did something so remarkably inflation-causing. He eliminated duty on so-called luxury goods. Everything was a luxury good in those days in Israel. A car, a fridge, a washer, a dryer, everything was a luxury good. Anything that was expensive was taxed double. All of a sudden, there was no more duty on the luxury goods, and the interest was so low, as I said, people could buy this stuff. And there was a shopping spree that took place in Israel that was so profound, it shot inflation through the ceiling. Now, they were working together, Bruno and Eridor. Eridor was considered the worst finance minister of all time, and what happened to him, why, from finance minister, he became Israel's UN ambassador. He was appointed by the next prime minister, by the way, was Shimon Peres. They got Menachem Begin out of power. This was 1984. Peres took over the prime minister for 2 years, and all of a sudden, inflation was all better within a month. Within a month or two, the inflation sunk to 20 and then to 8%. Well, Eridor was made the UN ambassador by Peres, for undoubtedly because of all his financial acumen. But Mikhail Bruno? Why, Mikhail Bruno retired to Switzerland working for the World Bank.
Well, because they look after one another, don't they?
They look after people who have a task to do. The task was to take Israel's inflation, which was around the 13th. It was high. It was, 12, 13%. They shot it up to 500%, and I knew people who really, really suffered personally from this inflation. Israel suffered miserably from this inflation, and it was done on purpose. You know, I'll tell you, the one reason that I suspect that this oil crisis may be manipulated is the fact that Bush passed a law to drill in the ocean.
Offshore drilling, right?
Pardon me?
Oh, they call it offshore drilling.
Offshore drilling. And the American public suddenly has lost its environmental consciousness, and there was absolutely, literally, no protest. Now, for the oil companies to have a whole brand new place to drill might very well have been manipulated. I don't know this for a fact.
I think you're absolutely right. It is manipulated. But remember, Chris, they can start drilling now. It'll be 5 or 6 years before any oil comes on board. I'm not against the offshore drilling. I'm just saying it's a ridiculous thing. This has been planned for a long period of time. They're creating this shortage. And, of course, the oil shortage, the rising price of oil, is going to crush our economy. We'll be back in just a moment here with Barry Samis to wrap up the program. Barry, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I had a couple of stories. My friend Baruch Ben Yosef, son Yehuda, was killed. He was a member of the Hilltop Youth. They put up new settlements on the hilltops. He was also a member of the security for, I believe it was Gush Etzion. For the first time in Israeli history, an Israeli military jet, no, it was a helicopter, it was a Sikorsky, a C-54, I believe. It doesn't matter, shot a missile at his car and blew him out, blew them out of the sky within Israel.
Now, why would the military have killed this man?
Because he was a dangerous radical who was, and his father was an attorney who was representing dangerous people because they really didn't like him.
Did this happen just recently?
No, this happened 12 years ago.
Okay, 12 years ago, and they actually, of course, they just used the missiles, probably an American missile, to kill this. So what happened? Was there any repercussions?
Well, his father wrote me, and he said, we know it was murder. Can we do anything about it? And I wrote up the story, and I reprinted his letter. I had known the father for many years previous to that. They shot a missile. It's that simple. It never happened before. Look, what you have in Israel is a very, very upsetting situation. And people, you can't imagine the sadness that my son is going in the army. Right, he's got an appointment this week, and I don't want him getting any trouble for Olmert or Paris. You think that doesn't make me sad and upset? Now, imagine people multiply that. They're victims of terror. They're watching while the most ugly terrorist of all, Sami Kuntar, is returned to Lebanon, to Hezbollah. And by the way, who negotiates with a terror group? Hezbollah isn't Lebanon, they're a terror group. Israel has uplifted their prestige worldwide by even negotiating with them. How do you like to be an Israeli and live in such a pathetic situation?
Well, I think everything's being done to demoralize the Israeli people. We're out of time, Barry. I want to thank you so much. Let's talk about the Holocaust next week.
Next week, Zionism.
I think it's an important subject, and I hope our listeners will be waiting for your program next week. Good night. God bless.
See you later. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and is Barry Shamus is a fascinating individual. He's been writing for many years about corruption in Israel, and certainly he had to leave Israel because of threats on his life, and he's here in the United States. We enjoy having him on. He gives you an overview of what's happening. Because what the significant thing he said tonight is that everything looks like there's going to be a Israeli attack on Iran. And, of course, it's going to come not from the Israeli jets flying from Israel, but Israeli jets which are stationed or at least have set down in American bases in Iraq. And, of course, if that were to happen, if Israel were to use American bases in Iraq as a base for their attack on Iran, why, of course, certainly the Iranians would respond, attacking our forces in Iraq, attacking our naval units, and heaven only help us. If the story we've read in the Iranian Monitor is true, that they've already dug, or in the process of digging, 320,000 graves in Iran, and of course the government says it's for the invading soldiers. It's not for the invading soldiers. It's going to be for the civilians who are going to die and to get rid of their bodies before they become a menace. Ladies and gentlemen, we're on the edge of a war that is going to have drastic implications right here at home, because believe me, there are sleeper cells here that are waiting, of course, to strike if we attack Iran. So we are living in very difficult times, and then, of course, with the financial situation we're seeing unfolding and the skyrocketing price of oil, which we've seen, although oil was down today, but this is all manipulated, and, of course, I believe ultimately the goal is the destruction of the American currency, the destruction of the American middle class, and bringing about the one world government. But you can't have a world government without having a global currency. And of course, what they really want is a one world government, a one world religion. They want coercive population control, and they want to eliminate a large part of the world's population. And if you don't believe that, you need to get my talks on Nandir College Genocide, Planned Population Reduction, Why Do We Still Have Cancer? That's a book we carry. And then, of course, the four tape sets on cancer, the four tape sets on genocide, the four tape sets on so many things, of course, that they're doing to destroy our health, genetically modified food. Dr. David Ayoub's wonderful DVD on mercury autism and the global population agenda. we have material on how they're poisonous with mercury, how they're poisonous with aspartame, how they're poisonous with fluoride. That's the hidden agenda material, the talk, the syllabus, with all of the documentation there, how they're actually attacking the virility of our men by lowering their testosterone level, by of course, lowering their sperm count. And, of course, this is what water fluoridation does. They know that. The scientific studies are there. If this is true, why isn't Rush Limbaugh telling him? Why, because he's getting $40 million for an five or eight-year contract. One of the finest conservatives. Money could buy. And the same is true with Hannity and so many of the other column people out there who get fantastic salaries. I don't get paid at all for doing what I do, but I'm trying to get the truth out. We need your help. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And you need an understanding that behind everything going on are powerful spiritual forces. That's why you need my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, the Forbidden Secret, Secret Knowledge, and the Planned Police State. That, of course, is the Forbidden Secret, Secret Knowledge, the Brotherhood of Darkness, and the Planned Police State. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, RadioLiberty.com. Go there. You can pull down our newsletters for nothing. You can listen to our programs there, which are archived and which are available on MP3 or available live, 4 hours a day live, but 9 hours a day of live feed to our satellite. And then, of course, we hope you go to our video section and to the news section. Other videos, and look at building number 7 coming down. You know what really happened on September 11th. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection, for our family, and for those who work with us. Good night.